Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Thanks to Juan for the update. Welcome back. Grant Paulson, Danny Ruye on 106.7 The Fan with you every day from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. after the Junkies and ahead of Chad Dukes versus the World, who comes your way deep into the evening. The Nats had some tough decisions to make, Danny, and they have started to make those calls. So on Wednesday, Ryan Zimmerman, Sean Doolittle, Asdrubal Cabrera, Kurt Suzuki, and Brock Holt all hit the open market as free agents with expiring contracts when the baseball offseason officially began. That happens the day after the World Series. So Zim, Du, Cabrera, Suzuki, and Holt, who was brought in this season during the pandemic, those guys all had deals that made them free agents. The Nats can beat the clock and try to get an extension done or allow them to hit the market, and they all did. But the first decisions the team actually made was that they had to decide whether or not they were going to pick up options on some of their key veterans. This is Adam Eaton, Howie Kendrick, Anibal Sanchez, and Eric Thames. And all four of those guys, in unsurprising fashion, are now free agents as well, as the team has decided that they are not going to pick up those options. That does not mean that none of the nine players that I just named will be back. Washington, like 29 other teams in baseball, now has the right to negotiate with those players. And we've seen this before. Yan Gomes is an example. They declined an option on last year, and then they agreed to a two-year, $10 million contract to bring him back. So as an example, I think Zimmerman is a guy they'll talk to and try to bring back. I think there's some interest probably in Howie Kendrick, if there's going to be a DH in the National League, which is unknown, something we can talk about. But just to give people the specifics and lay the groundwork for this convo really quickly, the numbers were Eaton, the 31-year-old outfielder, had a $10.5 million club option. So they had to pay him that or pay him $1.5 million to buy him out, and they paid him $1.5 million. Sanchez is now 36, coming off of a down year, and he's shown signs of aging over the last couple of years, and they had to either pay him $12.5 million to stay in their rotation or give him a $2 million parting bonus, and they did that. Kendrick and Thames, lesser money. Kendrick, they would have had to pay $6.5 million this coming year or give him $2.25 million. They did that, and then with Thames, it was a $4 million contract, mutual option, both had to agree upon, and they declined their side of it. So instead of paying him $4 million next year, they'll pay him $1 million to let him walk. So that's the numbers, that's the decisions that they've made. Those nine guys out, and depending on what happens, they could be losing another eight players from their World Series team that was less than a calendar year ago. Tomorrow's the one-year anniversary.
This was bound to happen. Right? I mean, when you field the roster and they saw a soft part of the market and an inefficiency in the market for veteran players, and said, we'll take these guys for cheap, right? The conventional wisdom right now, and it works very well, by the way, because young players are better than they've ever been by and large. It's not just a once-in-a-generation freak that's 20. There's a bunch of 21, 22-year-olds running around that are as good as anybody. So the market inefficiency over the last couple of years were these veterans in their early to mid-30s that nobody else wanted. The Nationals said, no problem. We would love Kendrick, massive hits, World Series championship. We'd love Sanchez, massive innings, World Series championship. Adam Eaton, et cetera, right? This was going to happen, though. These guys get older. They break down. Performance declines. You're going to have to move on and replenish at some point with a younger core and supplements therein. So this is it's more nostalgic and it's tougher because they won the World Series a calendar year ago tomorrow, as you kind of alluded to. But, yeah, this is inevitable. This was something that was always going to happen at some point. It just feels jarring that it's basically almost a year to the day since they did the ultimate thing. But, yeah, this makes sense. I mean, the two big names to me out of that real quick, GP, are Anibal Sanchez and Adam Eaton. I think this was the right call on both. You could have paid basically $23 million between those two guys. Eaton has really dropped off defensively. And, you know, maybe not the same guy at the plate. They need, it's almost by circumstance, they need a bopper, and he's got one of the spots that you might put one, either there or first base, et cetera. And they needed to move on from Anibal Sanchez, I think, as much as he struggled early on last year and then in this small sample this year. Really didn't give him a chance every fifth day.
Both true. And I would add, just as they're on their way out the door, how instrumental they were in that
Heroes.
Title, too.
Heroes.
I mean, Anibal Sanchez almost no-hits the Cardinals to start the NLCS, and it set the tone for that entire sweep of St. Louis. But he was masterful throughout much of that entire postseason and was excellent in the second half of the year last year.
100%.
You know, back when we used to play 162 games and you could be bad for a couple of months and we'd forget about it before the end of the marathon. But he got off to a terrible start. He goes to the injured list. He comes back. And I'm thinking, what on earth did they sign this guy for? He's old. He's not overpowering with his stuff. What are we doing here? And he ended up, I mean, the ultimate pitcher. But I actually think his legacy here, if I can wax poetic for a second, is less about that and more about what he meant in the clubhouse for the Latin players. You know, he was such a leader. I think sometimes people that have never been in a clubhouse don't know that there are occasionally factions, right? And it's not to say that guys don't all hang out. But in the same way that in a football locker room we say you need leaders, like it's really, really good to have someone like Anibal Sanchez for young Latin players, some of whom are fairly new to the States when they come over. I mean, you got guys in the big leagues that come right from Cuba to the major leagues, and you've got players that come from Japan, as an example, who have translators in the clubhouse. It's just not the same as maybe football or something where everyone can just sit there and communicate. And I think Anibal Sanchez just served a great role. You saw it with Gerardo Parra as well. And then in terms of just loosening, as you said, the dancing, the fun, all that stuff, he was the man. And he happened to pitch really well in the second half of the season. Sean Doolittle's legacy here goes without saying. Even though this year it was ugly at times, last year he went through a brutal stretch before he got his act together late in the year and then pitched very well, huge outs, constantly in the playoffs. He was a dominant reliever here for years, and he was one of the best closers and best late-inning arms in baseball for an extended period of time. And at 34 years old now, I'm sure he wants to keep playing, and he'll go try to reinvent himself. I saw that he's going to go to the Driveline facility this offseason to try to analytically get himself a little further along and back where he used to be in terms of spin rate and things. I mean, he's a really cerebral, intuitive guy, so I hope that works for him. But who was more involved in the community? I mean, we had him in studio a couple times, even before we did the weekly segments with him, where he was doing something with the military or doing something with this organization or in some parade. I mean, he and his wife were just so involved and really took to D.C., so that was cool. Kendrick is a hero forever, the biggest swing in the division series against the Dodgers, the biggest swing in the World Series against the Astros. I think there's a chance he comes back, but the DH has to be a factor here, and this is why baseball's got to make a quick decision on this. Like, teams are trying to figure out, do we keep this guy or not? I'm trying to remember which team it was recently. I don't know if you saw this, but they literally came out and said, if there's a DH, we're going to re-sign this player and pick up his option, and if there's not, we're not going to. You know who it was? It was the Padres and Mitch Moreland. And they literally said, if we can DH Mitch Moreland next year like we did this year, we're keeping him. If we can't, then we're not going to. So, baseball, please make up your mind. There's a lot of situations like that. Like, if you have a DH, you should absolutely give Howie Kendrick a one-year deal for next year. If you can't, then you shouldn't, probably, if he has to play first base and second base. And I saw in the Washington Post, I don't know if you saw this, that Jesse Dougherty wrote, that Kendrick on September 25th told reporters he actually planned on this being his last year he was going to retire, but the only reason he thinks he wants to come back next year, he was going to listen to his body and see what happened this offseason. But he didn't want this season where he couldn't have his kids around him and they couldn't be at batting practice and all that, and the 60-game sprint. He didn't want that to be kind of their last memory of him playing baseball. Like, he's got older kids who can actually hang out in the clubhouse and get a lot out of it. Right. So he kind of wants one more year to be with them at work every day during the summer and have them around the team and shagging balls during BP. So maybe he does want to play another year. But isn't it a big difference if there's a DH or not as to whether or not you'd throw cash at Howie?
Without a doubt. And listen, we're not talking about, you know, payroll-altering, franchise-altering money here.
No, still, what, like $4 million bucks maybe for a year or something?
Yeah, but it's definitely a thing. Like, is there a DH or not? They need to know. And the things that each of us, I think it was a little over a month ago, each of us had read whatever we'd read, right? And kind of looking around, trying to read the tea leaves. And you were like, yeah, there's no way there's a DH. And I was like, I think there might be a DH. The point is, not that one of us is right or wrong, that there's no clarity, that nobody knows. I don't know, a major component of what the league is going to be in, I don't know, 3 months, 4 months, when they start throwing again and getting back together for pitchers and catchers. Somebody needs to decide something ASAP. Rob Manfred is up there shaking and quaking, all confused, has no idea what's going on. Please decide these sorts of things. Please decide what the playoff format is. For goodness sakes, get on the horn. You just got through a season. Pat yourself on the back for getting through it. Get your Justin Turner investigation. Really ramp that up, because that's what's critical and important. But after you're done with that, I don't know, figure out what your rules are for your major sport, sir.
Yeah. I mean, he could just defer. They have a CBA. They have a contract already signed for next year that says there's no DH. So he could just say everything we negotiate is for the future. But the question is, after seeing how the DH worked and knowing that it creates jobs, do they want to put the toothpaste back in the tube and wait a year? Teams that signed players like Bryce Harper to the Phillies for those crazy contracts, the Angels with Mike Trout, you know, the Angels knew that at the end of that deal, he's probably going to be DHing. You know, he's going to be like what we know Albert Pujols says right now, you know, this old kind of bigger bodied dude that didn't age that well. They're banking on eventually there's going to be a DH in the NL. They've known for years that's going to happen. Is it now permanent, or is it not happening until the new CBA after the 2021 season? But you're right, it's just a decision they absolutely have to make in the near future. And we haven't even talked about Ryan Zimmerman. I do want to touch on him, so let's do that next. If you guys have any thoughts on this, you can absolutely give us a call. I know you don't get a chance to talk Nats all that often on the phones right now in late October, with them not playing in the playoffs and their season having seemingly been over, it feels like, for months. But the AAA Always On Call listener line is open for you at 800-636-1067. What about Ryan Zimmerman? He opted out this year after getting that one-year deal. That would be a tough way for him to see his legendary career here end and not really get his roses at the end of his time waving going into the sunset. Are we going to see him back this coming season at first base? You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. The AAA Always On Call listener lines are yours right now at 800-636-1067. We will get to them in just a second. A rare chance to talk about the Nats with some baseball news right now. Mike Rizzo and his staff, after a hiatus where they were just watching the postseason like the rest of us and maybe having some meetings about the future, got to work yesterday declining the options of 4 players and allowing 5 others to hit free agency. So the list: Adam Eaton, Howie Kendrick, Anibal Sanchez, Eric Thames, Ryan Zimmerman, Sean Doolittle, Asdrubal Cabrera, Kurt Suzuki, and Brock Holt, all veterans who may not be back next year. You know, among them, you're talking about Eaton, critical in the playoff run. They don't win the World Series without him. Kendrick, even bigger in the postseason run. They definitely don't win the World Series without him. Anibal Sanchez, awesome throughout the postseason. I don't think they win it without him. I guess they possibly could have, but I don't think they make the playoffs without Anibal Sanchez. I feel real confident in saying that. Ryan Zimmerman was huge. He was the one that drew first blood off the Astros and Gerrit Cole when it looked like, you know, he came in. Everyone was saying they couldn't score on him. They wouldn't hit him. He was invincible for a few innings, and then Zim took him deep. He had a huge home run in a win at Nats Park against the Dodgers on a 3-run bomb that was actually the highest ball off the ground, a national hit over the wall that whole season. Really an amazing swing for him off of, I think it was Baez out of the bullpen.
It was Baez, yeah.
Doolittle, you don't win the World Series without that guy. He carried him early in the year, bad bullpen. And then in the playoffs, it was basically the he and Hudson show. Asdrubal Cabrera, massive swings, a monster last 40 or so games after he was acquired via trade. And Kurt Suzuki, awesome in guiding those pitchers through some big spots.
Hit that homer in game 2 also, yeah.
What are you doing game 2?
He hit that homer in game 2. Remember Dave's call? He's never hit a postseason home run.
Oh,
and now
call,
he has
yeah.
to put him up. It was a 2-2 game.
You're
he
right.
puts him up 3-2, then they go on to score a million runs. But
forgot
that's
about
a 2-2
that.
Game into the seventh, I think.
Yep, he hit the homer that broke the tie. pulled it down the left field line, right?
That's right.
Into
that's
the right. Crawford
you and I
boxes.
We're doing the calm, a very, very subdued reaction in the box with Charlie and Dave. Well, they're trying to make calls. We're smacking each other.
Yeah, we're just like punching each other in the ribs and like slapping each other's arms and stuff. Yeah, that was
very professional.
What a difference a year ago to now, by the way.
Yeah. What were you doing last year at this time?
My God. I mean, we were in Houston.
Yep.
In a box with 15 people like hanging on top of each other, breathing in each other's faces.
Yeah.
50,000 people in that ballpark probably, or more, I would guess. Whatever capacity is, add 10,000. Like,
yeah,
don't have any fire marshals show up. We're violating every rule.
I know. We're doing Facebook Lives, like, around the stadium holding my computer up. It's just, what planet was that compared to what's happening right now?
Remember the parade, by the way?
Yes, I do.
Do you remember that when we were on buses?
That's right.
Going down the street in Washington, D.C. with people screaming at us?
Completely deserved, Grant. A very reasonable thing to have happened.
Nobody deserved more than me and you to be on a bus. Nobody deserves the World Series ring that I see you in pictures rocking occasionally.
That's right.
Nobody deserves that more than you do. You played left field in every game this last season.
Tracking balls. You know, my first step's the best. Very good.
Before the phones, we got to be quick here because I want to get both of these calls in, and we got some things to get back to football-wise. But Zimmerman, here is my thought on this. You know him pretty well personally. I really don't. I mean, I've interviewed him a ton like you have, but you have a better relationship with him than I do in terms of, you know, just in life. So you have a better feel maybe for what he's thinking. This is my tinfoil hat Thom theory. I think the hardest thing to do for a player in terms of retiring and leaving the game is actually like ripping the Band-Aid off, where you now don't go to the ballpark every day. You don't feel the scream when you run out of the tunnel, or in his case, out of the dugout to the crowd, and where you the juice of competing every day leaves, and you're afraid of that. You don't know what that's going to feel like. He just had a year with his wife. He's got a new baby and kids and family. He's kind of ripped the Band-Aid off. Like, all the hard stuff about retiring, he's already done. Does he want to go back and now play again? Or do you just say, wasn't how I would have envisioned it or planned it, but all the stuff that you worry about when you leave the game, I did.
You
see what I'm saying?
That.
Like, it would be hard for me after, like, making that jump off of the cliff into the water to then go back up and do it again a year later.
I get it. And I can tell you specifically, we have not talked about it. And, you know, it's one of the things I try never to do is to pressure and pry for, you know, on that sort of stuff. It's definitely his business. In an interview setting, we could certainly talk about it. But, you know, the thing that he kept coming up with us every time we would have conversations, you, me, him, is how good he felt. How good he felt. And all the different training and some of the methods that he was using now over the last couple of seasons. You know, when that foot thing kept creeping up, and you and I both remarked, dude, you look all cut up and shredded and loose. You look great. And he's like, yeah, I feel awesome. And that's what was so frustrating about that foot, that plantar fascia thing that wouldn't quit for all those months. I guess it was a couple years ago now. But if he's still feeling great, then what's the next logical step?
Well, yeah.
I'd like to play some baseball. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I have no good feel for it.
Let's squeeze in Chris in Hyattsville really quick. We got Brian Baldinger coming up at the bottom of the hour. Chris, what do you got?
Hey, this is my thing, right? So the Nats are, you know, if they didn't have Strasburg, Scherzer, and Corbin, you could say that this is a complete total rebuild because they don't, at this point, they don't have a major league lineup right now. You know, they've got the best hitter in the National League, in my opinion, maybe all of baseball, but that's only one slot. And then when you get to the pitching staff, there are really no guarantees other than, you know, Corbin is locked up. But Scherzer, he's still Max Scherzer, but I don't think he's, you know, 2015 Max Scherzer anymore, and we can't expect him to be. And Strasburg's coming off of a really significant surgery on his pitching arm, which should not be downplayed, or you can't assume that he's going to come back and be the Strasburg of old. So, unfortunately, however, when I think the Nats should be, if not the biggest player in the free agency market, historically the Learners have been, let's just say, frugal. And given that there's no certainty that there will be fans in the stands at the beginning of next baseball season, I can't see them committing the amount of money that they should to put a competitive team back on the field. So I'm really concerned about that. And, you know, it's not like we have the farm system that some of these other clubs have been able to develop, like Tampa.
Yeah, the farm system is now bad. We got to jump because we got Baldinger coming up. Appreciate the call. I mean, real quick, I would just say there are no guarantees that he talks about in the rotation is better than 27 or 28 other no guarantees in any rotations. I mean, yes, Scherzer's getting older. Strasburg's coming off injury. Corbin had a down year. 27 teams would trade rotations with them this second. So know that. Second, he talks about the lineup not being kind of MLB caliber right now. You got two MVP candidates, Soto and Trey Turner, to build this whole thing around. You add a couple of bats to that, all of a sudden you are a top five or so lineup in the National League. So I think they're closer than maybe you're thinking right now, but they got to spend money. And to your point, you don't know if they do or will or if they want to, and I think that's fair. I don't either. I have no idea if they're going to be willing to. But I promise you, if they bring in a couple big bats and do spend that money, then they can absolutely be a playoff team and a championship contender if their rotation is healthy next year. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Brian Baldinger next on G&D. Pumped for this segment. On the line, Radio.com Sports NFL insider Brian Baldinger. Insider calls are brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Learn more at Indeed.com/credit. You can also hear Brian with Jason Lockonfora on Baldy's Breakdowns with new episodes out twice a week. Just search Baldy wherever you find your podcasts. He is one of the best. Brian, how much film do you watch? I mean, break it down for me, because I go to your Twitter and your Instagram accounts all the time for content, but I mean, what's your day like? Are you just in the lab constantly?
Yeah, I'm here now. if I get in on Sunday night from a game, I will, but I had to come from Providence last week or from Foxborough last week, couldn't get here Sunday night. But I did get in here at 5:30 Monday morning, and, you know, I put in my 14, 16-hour days. I got a chance to watch every game or most of every game. I watched parts of every game and a bunch of all of them. So,
is that via All 22, or do you watch like TV copy?
No, I don't watch the TV.
Else.
I just watch the All 22. I let the TV people do their thing. If I want some clarification on something, you know, whether it was a instant replay or a coaching decision, I might flip on the TV version. I just have to hit a button and listen to the TV version if I want to hear it. But I learn a lot just by watching it, so that's usually what I do.
So what you've seen here in the NFC East, Baldy, it's not good. And I saw one of your tweets about the Cowboys. Basically, you're saying, I can't do it anymore. I can't watch whatever the hell this is. Someone's got to win this division. I checked the bylaws. That's the rule. Who's going to do it and why?
Well, I mean, John Madden used to joke that the football season never starts until there's a frost in the pumpkin. And, you know, I mean, I woke up this morning, it was raining, it was 55 degrees. It's you know, there's no frost yet. So we're almost out of October. It's up for grabs. I mean, my gut is that the Eagles are going to get healthier and get better, and they're going to be the team to beat. Now, they got to play the Cowboys on Sunday night. We'll see, you know, what transpires. My guess is that they're going to find a way to win and start stacking some wins. But it's wide open. I mean, but I don't believe that the winner is going to have five wins or six wins. I think somebody's going to start stacking some wins. I don't know who it is. My guess is it's going to be the Eagles, though.
When you watch Washington before and after the quarterback change, what jumps out at you? What are your thoughts on Allen versus Haskins, Allen himself, how he's running the offense?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, when you – Allen's just making better decisions with the football. You know, he's completing, you know, a better percentage and throwing more touchdown passes. He's just made better decisions with the football. He gets the ball out a little quicker. He sees things a little faster. He did for a stretch of time in Carolina last year. So he might be more familiar with Scott Turner's offense. I'm sure he is. You know, they got one, you know, big-time threat in Terry McLaurin. And I found a way to get the ball to him last week. I don't know what Dallas was doing on the play. But I don't think Dallas knew. But you take advantage of it, you know. And, you know, Antonio Gibson was a good dual threat player when he was at Memphis. He obviously had the game of his life last Sunday against a poor defense. But, you know, I mean, even the decision, the touchdown to Logan Thomas, I mean, you know, Jalen Smith should have had the tackle on, but he gets a touchdown pass for it. He's just making better decisions with the football right now. And he's, you know, I think he's got better mobility than Dwayne Haskins.
Baldy, the Bills are 5-2. And if you just look at that, you go, that's great. Josh Allen was playing like an MVP through a handful of weeks. And all of a sudden, though, it looks like there's some leaks on the Bills ship here. That win against the Jets, even though it's an NFL game and it's obviously they're hard to win, but man, was that unimpressive as they trailed for a lot of that one. And all of a sudden, we're reexamining them. Where do you stand on the Bills?
Well, I'm like you. You know, defensively, they lost a lot of players. I mean, there was a game when they lost, you know, Tre'Davious White and Levi Wallace is out for the season and Josh Norman. And so they're playing their fourth, fifth, and sixth corners, you know. And so, and they lost Matt Milano, who's their best coverage linebacker. You know, I mean, they've lost a lot defensively. So they were the number two defense in the league last year. Second fewest points given up, you know. And this year, they're somewhere around the middle of the pack, around 15 or something. So they've gone backwards defensively. And Josh Allen has kind of come back to the pack a little bit after his game against Oakland when they were – or Las Vegas when they were 4-0. I mean, he was in the MVP conversation. But, you know, they haven't been crisp. The routes haven't been really good. You know, he's had balls that have been dropped and tipped. I'm not making excuses for him. But they haven't been good. And Devin Singletary last year, as a backup to Frank Gore, was one of the most explosive runners in the NFL. And he's just not like that this year. He just hasn't had those kind of explosive runs. So it's a little bit of everything right now. I think they're still the favorites, but, you know, we got to watch and see what Tua does in Miami this week and how he plays coming off a bye week. They've given him the keys to the car. The team around him is a lot better than it was a year ago. But we got to see how he plays. If he plays like Justin Herbert, you know, Miami will be in the hunt.
Speaking of Justin Herbert, I'm trying not to overdo this. You know, I watch that guy and just get blown away and think, well, he's the next big thing in this league. He's unbelievable. I mean, you help me out here a little bit so I don't get ahead of myself. It seems to me like he's been tremendous, one of the better quarterbacks in the league. Is that crazy?
Well, I was there at SoFi Stadium when the Chargers were playing the Chiefs in week two, and Tyrod Taylor, right before the opening kickoff, went in the locker room. Nobody knew what had happened at that time. And I saw, you know, Justin Herbert go out there and take the team right down the field for a touchdown against the Chiefs, and it took a 59-yard field goal in overtime to beat them. He's had that team in every single game, and last week, you know, he really, you know, he got his first NFL victory. But there's not a pass he can't make. He has such poise, but he looks like he's been doing it for about 8 years. I mean, there's nothing about the way that he plays the game. If it's a bad snap, he just calmly, like, collects it, sets his feet, makes a throw. He's made unbelievable throws. Last week, Keenan Allen had one of the...
Our double play, so let's get to it. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
GP, let me give it to you quick. Number one, happy birthday to Thommy. That's right, Thommy's birthday today. Happy
Ooh,
birthday, buddy.
Thommy!
Happy
Where's
birthday
your mom's call at, Thommy?
Oh, I banned that at 30. She called at 29, and then I said, you can't do it anymore. You can't call for the 3-0. This year's 32, so I think the streak has been broken finally.
I think we need to get back on the tracks here and get the car on the road. We need to get a call from Thommy's mom to wish him a happy birthday. That was always one of my favorite things.
Well, you know, Grant, this is a timed segment. We need to keep it short. We don't have too much time. So I think, you know, we'll probably just miss the call this year.
Do you remember, Danny, when she did call the one time? And I'm pretty sure, I can't remember exactly. Didn't Tom hang up on her, I think?
No, I was just playing the sound machine over her the whole time.
That's right. Yeah.
And when he did have to talk, he was not verbose. He was curt.
Right.
He kept it very brief is the way I would phrase it.
Happy birthday, Tom.
Yeah, happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
Hope it's a good one. Celebrate. I've been sitting on this story for a couple weeks. It's not urgent. It's not timely. Well, it is kind of timely, I suppose. So this is from the Sun Papers in the UK, okay? A Mindshare. Now, Mindshare is a digital advertising firm as part of WPP, this giant conglomerate communications, public relations, technology, international company that nobody has ever heard of. But they're like one of those 10, 11 richest companies in the world, okay? And they've got a million different companies underneath it. So here's what happened. Zoom call. It's the reality of 2020, right? So here's what happened. Nick Emery headed for the loo. This is a very British story. In the middle of a lengthy meeting where it is claimed he showed his behind as a prank. A witness said the Mindshare CEO filmed himself with his bottom out while having a wee. But Powell said he didn't bear anything. At least one person at the meeting notified Mindshare owner WPP and Mr. Emery, who managed thousands of staff and multi-million dollar budgets, was sacked after a probe. A source said, Nick clearly didn't think this through. Another source, it was a spontaneous prank gone horribly wrong. Other top Mindshare bods on the call got offended and made immediate complaints to WPP top brass. The dude got fired. He was so tired of being in a meeting that he kind of took the laptop. I think he forgot to turn off his video or something, and did what you do in a restroom, and got fired because of it. CEO, multi-million dollar international corporation, fired because of a Zoom call snafu.
So this was not in any way purposeful. This was a complete mistake.
So some people are saying it's a prank, and some people are saying it's just an error. So I don't know what's true. I do know that this guy was with the firm since 1997 at its launch, and it's a huge, multinational conglomerate, big deal firm, fired because he took the computer into the restroom.
So I'd have a lot of questions here before I come up with a hard stance. I need to know exactly what was seen on video.
Right.
Okay? Exactly what was seen on video.
And I
need
to
know
if
it was
to that.
Purposeful or not purposeful. I think that matters. This might sound silly, but if you leave your camera up and you think you double click when you're trying to turn off the camera and everything's muted and you run to the bathroom and come back because you're in the middle of an hour-long meeting, I think there are probably thousands of people who have done that during this weird pandemic, right? I'm working from home. This guy's babbling on in a meeting. Let me shut everything down so they can't see me and I'm still present and I'm running to the bathroom. If you are just willy-nilly and nonchalant and you decide, well, who cares if they see me in the bathroom? We're all comfortable with each other now. And you just take your computer in and through a mirror shot or something, they see something they're not supposed to. Yeah, I'd say you can get in pretty big trouble for that.
So just thinking of us, remember when Brendan and Thom had to stay home, right? And we were doing,
right.
they were on Zoom calls or whatever. They could have done this to me. I didn't mute the microphone. The latrine, the loo, is 6 feet to my right. They heard everything. Had they decided, HR complaint, your boy could be out on his tuchus. I'm just saying.
I don't think you'd be out on your tuchus for that, is my point. I think there is a difference.
I hope not. I mean, I don't know. It's the kind of thing that 2020 is going to get you. And if this is an accident, this is terrible for this guy. If it's a prank, it's just a bad joke.
Yes.
I don't like people getting fired for bad jokes, but I don't know, man. This is one of those what am I thinking of? Where it's just sort of throwing the net down at the bottom and getting the bare minimum of detail, right? It's just
right.
Sort of dragging up the skinny on it. I don't know what the video showed. I don't know what his intent was. There's very little detail here to this, but my big takeaway is CEO, millionaire, fired.
It's time for your boys' double play. I'll make it quick. So I've got my Reading Rainbows book club Zoom call tonight with my buddies. The book that we read is called American Kingpin, The Epic Hunt for the Criminal Mastermind Behind the Silk Road. Do you know what the Silk Road is? Do you know anything
it's
about
a trade road in China?
It is not that. No, this
not
is a
that?
Different website that a guy created that backfired big time on him. It is an amazing book. If you want a book to read that's a page-turner that I have loved, American Kingpin, The Epic Hunt for the Criminal Mastermind Behind the Silk Road, the Reading Rainbows book for the month of October in 2020. We'll have our Jim Coleman discussion. The Beltway Blitz comes your way next. Come to Vance. We'll be right back.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.